it's really wonderful because I get to interview so many different types of people. And it's really great to interview just like massive artists like Stuart Copeland and to find them so friendly and so refreshingly honest about their career and what their journey. And then it's also interesting to talk to a brand new artist who's had a very interesting time, had a very interesting life for their very, very young years. You can see that reflected in the way they make music. You can see that reflected in the melodies and the lyrics. Beautiful music, well-crafted songs. And I really love the flow and the kind of depth and the seriousness to this artist, as well as that, you know, having some kind of humour to it and having kind of like a cheekiness to what she does. So really hope you enjoy this interview. There's a new artist called Eve Wilder. For me, I just feel like there's so many interesting new young artists coming up right now. And I don't know if it's kind of, did you start doing, I mean, I know you've been, how old are you now? Sorry, if you
don't mind. I'm 19.
Yeah, so you signed a deal at 18, right?
Yeah.
But do you feel like COVID really kind of, I feel like there's so many interesting artists coming up, and that's why I wanted to talk to you, because it's like, yes, I interviewed some famous and some world-renowned people, but I think it's people that you are really inspiring, actually, for me as an artist, because there's so many interesting things that I've got lots of questions for you that I want to ask you. So yeah, it's my pleasure, I would say.
Thank you so much. That's really sweet. I think that I found lockdown really interesting, and just as like a fan of music, I find it very interesting. I love studying music and like the way that it kind of changes and stuff and the place that it has in the world. And I do think that COVID made a massive difference to a lot of people. I think for one, it made people want sad songs a bit less. I think we were all sad enough, and I think that the day of the ballad might be soon over, which I'm quite excited about because I was getting really, really bored. I think people just want bangers now, and people want live music that you can tell that humans are behind a bit more than before. But for me, I mean, I was making music before, but it was in lockdown where I basically wasn't in school, so I kind of put myself through like kind of a music marketing course, I guess, or just any music kind of course. I stopped playing piano, I started playing guitar, I learned to sing, I learned to produce, so it was definitely important for me.
I remember I started my radio show actually during COVID, and I remember thinking this is actually going to change the face of music in so many different countries, because now you've gone from people making music. People made music in their bedrooms. It's not like that was a new thing, but everybody making music in their bedrooms. Yeah. And I think also the industry really ran in a way to kind of keep up with that, because there were so many kind of bedroom DJs and so many people were like, I've got this cupboard in my house, I'm going to put some recording equipment in it and I'm going to get and I think that, you know, because a lot of music, you know, plugins used to sound awful, now they sound absolutely amazing, and I think, but they do sound slightly different, and I think that slight difference, that technology has really changed the face and the sound and the style of music, really.
I totally agree, and in a good way in so many aspects, but there is nothing like, I think people just started to appreciate people maybe a little bit more. And even I noticed it, like the first time I went to a gig after lockdown, it was a Wolf Alice gig, and the crowd was just like electric, like everyone was pushing each other, and yeah, it was great. It was so much fun. So yeah, I'm finding it very interesting kind of seeing, I feel like we'll be seeing the impact for like, I don't know, another 5 or 10 years.
Yeah, probably. I think there'll be studies and documentaries about the way COVID changed music, the way COVID changed this, the way COVID changed that. One of the things I really love when I read your bio is that I think that we're kind of united in the same Kathleen Hanna quote about uniting the girls making music alone in their bedrooms. Because I really identify with this idea of that we all started off at 12 years old, 11 years old, 10 years old, writing lyrics under the blanket and hiding it from everyone. It was definitely, I mean, why do you think so many shy little girls end up becoming these big stars, these big rock stars? But it's really like the opposite of how they started in many ways.
That I think because, especially with girls, you're always looking for permission somehow, until a certain point where you realise you don't need it. But you kind of, it feels a lot easier to be really big on stage and take up a lot of space than it does in just a room full of people. And from playing on stage and releasing music, that's now translated into my normal life. I don't really feel like I need to care about taking up space anymore. But I think that's why it's so appealing to so many of us, because it's such a big outlet kind of for a part of you that you're not confident enough to show yet.
And it's interesting because I do think that, you know, as when we're little girls, when we're writing our little... I mean, I had a little Filofax because I'm old, you know, I'm 80s. Sick. But, you know, and I would, like, write these words and these lyrics into... And they were lyrics. They weren't poetry, because I wrote poetry too. Because they had verses, choruses and middle eights and outs. You know, they were songs, you know, lyrics.
Yeah.
And I used to write... By the time I think I went to do my first recording session at, like, 16 or 17... I had like about 24 songs because I've just been writing these songs in my little Filofax. And it's so interesting that we feel that we're taking up, we're so conditioned to think that we're taking up space, that we're so apologetic. And I think, and then you know, you walk on stage and you have to kind of unlearn all that stuff in order to do what you want to do and be successful, right? Because you can't be like the shy, tiny little girl on stage. You have to actually push yourself to come out of it, you know?
How did you do that? Because I'm still on the way there.
I will say, if I give you a word of advice, there is no fast way to being good on stage. It just takes... I did it by putting myself in situations where I'd have to sing live. And then just, I couldn't get out of it. And so then I would have to do it. And the more you do it, I used to have terrible for stage fright. And it literally is just doing it over and over again and taking any opportunity to sing, because it's just practice. And some of that shyness always stays there, and that's kind of nice for being on stage. But it really is just, you just have to keep doing it, and eventually it just gets easier.
I can't wait. I mean, yeah, it does every gig, but I'm still very new to it. We've played like 7, I think, or 8.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's still like...
I really love... But what I really loved about your style and your sound is that it does have a very strong style, and it does have a very strong style. Sound.
Thank you.
And feel. And I think that your voice and the way that you write your songs has definitely, there's an image that is kind of conjured up. It's almost quite, it's quite American Indian in some ways, you know, because you double track vocals and, you know, you kind of almost whisper lyrics in some ways, whispery sister. But did you have to, I hope this doesn't sound arrogant, but it seems to me that writing lyrics is something that comes easy to you. You know, being able to translate what you want to say in a way that's interesting. That's the kind of easy part, right? And then is the rest of it a lot more difficult, like creating the sounds around the voice and the songs and the lyrics? Or is that just a full statement?
Well, I'm very flattered that you... It sounds like it comes easy. Often it does. I think if the melody is good enough, it comes straight away. But I have been known to spend like years, like kind of over one verse, just trying to get the right word in the right place. But I think for me, I've always been a wordy person. That's probably that, and the music of it comes the easiest. The thing that was hard is... which is what lockdown kind of forced me to do, which was like, no one's going to sing for me and no one's going to produce me, no one's going to play guitar for me. I've got to try and learn all of that. And singing was like the worst case scenario that could ever happen to me. I was like, I joined a choir in year when I was like 8, just because there was a free trip to Disneyland in it, and I mimed the whole way through because I thought singing was so embarrassing. So That's what comes the hardest, is being the front person. That wasn't what I had planned out. But yeah, lyrics are my favourite thing. I think I always look for lyrics in other songs as well.
Because you have a natural empathy for telling a story, which I really love.
Thank you.
And it's interesting because there's certain parts of things that I do that I have to be honest and say, I discovered like about 15 years that those things were much harder for other people. Like for instance, doing harmonies, I didn't realise that, I thought that all singers could sing harmonies. And it's something I didn't realise until much later in my career that that was actually hard for some people. And that's good, you know, but certain things were really hard for me, like walking on stage was the hard part for me. You know, but the actual creative part was like, and some of the singing was like, oh, that's just easy, that's the easy bit. And we have to kind of, you know, remember that that's, I think there's always easy parts to what we do. And then there's always parts that are a little bit kind of like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Exactly. But if it was easy, if it was a breeze all the time, it wouldn't be as fun at all. Because it's the adrenaline of being nervous about something that makes you like give a really good performance. So I wouldn't take it back.
Yeah. No, it does. It does. It does help kind of project you onto the stage. What's the hardest thing that you have so far to deal with? I mean, I realise I'm talking to you, which is fantastic, at the very beginning of your career in many ways as well. But you've got already got like a strong body of work, you know, and I'm going to ask you about the new single later on. But what's been the hardest thing for you to be able to get over as an artist?
I got so used to working by myself. I used to do everything by myself, and it's giving up some of that control and being able to, because I think for me, music is a bit of an armor. Like the kind of personality that I have in my songs is a way more confident version of me, which it is for most people. I think that's what it is for them. So having to take that back and, like, for example, have someone hear me sing bad, like work with a producer for the first time and know that he was hearing my first draft, and how like excruciatingly embarrassing I found that at first, getting over myself in that way, being like, it's way better to do it with other people. They know more than you, like let them in and let them see you like fail at stuff. That was the hardest thing, but the most rewarding thing, because it made things way better than it could have been by myself.
Yeah. What do you think about the kind of advent of, as a weird question, about the advent of, as an artist, as a, you know, because you're a real proper serious artist, obviously, and what do you think the advent of AI in music, how do you think it's going to change? Do you know a lot about it? I mean, I was talking to my guitarist, we were doing some gigs over the weekend, and he was telling me that, I think it's in Japan, there's over like 100 tracks that are in the charts that are like completely fake and, you know, made our AI artists. I mean, you know, for that market, it's kind of like, you know, one step away from K-pop, isn't it? It's like,
yeah, you don't, I can
even
see
need
that.
You don't even need, actually need real people anymore, you know.
It's true. It's, I have done a lot of thinking about it, because it does seem like that's the future in a lot of ways, but I try to be quite an optimistic person, and I think that especially in the genres that me and you do, I think it's going to be a long time until they can make AI that will make like a good rock song or a good punk song, because the whole point of that is human emotion, and I don't think they've got there yet. But I also think it will lead to some really cool things. Like, I saw what Grimes said the other day. I thought it was quite cool how she was just like, use my voice. There's no copyright. Take it. Have fun with it. I wouldn't do that, but I think it could make for some cool stuff. But I also do have a little impending sense of doom about it. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's I think it's interesting what you said. I mean, I think there's like two sides to it. I think any technology is all, it depends on how you use it. You can use it for good or you can use it for bad. And obviously, a lot of people are going to use it for bad. But at the same time, I think there's parts of it that could be quite interesting, and there could be some interesting art come out of it. But I just think humans are really fucking lazy. So I can see some people just thinking, I want to be an artist and I want to be amazing, but I can't sing and I have absolutely no talent and I can't write, but I want to be famous. So I'm just going to let them use my face and my image, and then they can write, AI can write all the songs. And do you know what I mean? There's definitely, and also I think that there's definitely a kind of consumer that doesn't really care about depths and humanity and soul. There's definitely a market for all of that. But at the same time, I think it's like, you know, in the same way that it'll go mad, and then after a while everyone will just think, oh god, I really would love to hear real artists now, and then it just swing the other way. So it'll go mad, and there'll be all these big artists that'll be huge, and AI completely, you know, fake artists, and then people will be like, want to do it the other way. They'll be like, no, you know what, I don't want any of that, and there'll be like a backlash against it. But there'll be some elements that I think will be quite useful. Like, I think it will help people write in some ways if they get stuck.
For sure. And if there's people, those people that you were talking about, and I've met so many of them that are like, I want to be a singer, but it's like, how long have you been singing? They're like, I don't. And they're like, what music are you into? And they're like, I don't know. And it's just, they clearly want to be famous.
Yeah.
Things have always existed.
The worst
for those
part
people.
About the whole job.
The worst part about
the whole job is the famous bit. I know people think it's the, you know, but it really isn't the most annoying thing about what we do.
Yeah, the best part is like, making a tune that and like, or like jamming with your band, that is clearly the best part. But I mean, there's always been like X Factor for those people. There'll always be something. So yeah. I'm not even that worried about AI.
Yeah. Who are your heroines? When did you have like an aha moment where you were like, I want to be an artist, or was it like a long, slow, gradual burn? Who are your heroes and heroines, or just heroes?
Well, I kind of grew up listening. It was like the classics. I loved Motown, like all of the bands. That was like my favorite stuff, and the Beatles, and like David Bowie, just like all the classics. And then when I started like becoming a teenager, it felt a bit less accessible because it was like these are all like proggy, amazing guys who I don't really relate to that much. And then I heard Courtney Love, and that was like the moment. And I heard Violet, and at the bit where she started screaming, I was like, what the, like, that's it, that was it. But it kind of, I made a purposeful choice because I realized I used to have, my wall was covered in post-its, and I realized one day that it was all men, except for Amy Winehouse. And I love her, but like, it's, to me, I don't find that story inspiring because it's just like heartbreaking. So I wanted to find some like really strong female artists that were still going, and yeah, that's why I found Courtney, and then I found Riot Girl, and then that was what really set me off.
It was all over. Exactly. I mean, you know, she's a force to be reckoned with. Amazing artist.
She is. She really is. I think she was the first woman I ever saw that kind of wasn't really trying to be likable, which is a really freeing thing, because that's kind of the main thing you've got to try and be as a girl. You've got to try and make everyone comfortable, and she wasn't, and that was just so liberating for like a little shy girl at the time.
I read a quote with The Weeknd about that, you know, that one of the best things humanity can do, or women can do for themselves, is to stop wanting to be liked by everybody. Yeah. And stop trying to please everybody. That's when you become a much more interesting creative artist.
For sure.
What's the single most important thing about what you do and about the way that you write? You produce, right? You play guitar, you play piano, and you... I'm going to ask you a technical question, sorry. So you you started with Logic, or...?
Yeah, my uncle is a coder, so he cracked Logic for me when I was like... I owe everything to him, because... He, on the same day, he cracked Logic for me and was like, you should get into production. And he also gave me my first electric guitar, which was about 20 quid, and it was from Argos. And that set me off for like the next 4 years, just because of he saw that could happen. So yeah, Logic, I'm a Logic girl. I can't do the other stuff. It's too advanced for me.
You know, Logic is all you need. I started with Ableton, and when I went to Logic, which I still love, but when I went to Logic, I was like, oh, everything is here.
Yeah.
Everything is here.
It's all laid out. It's beautiful. It's so good. Yeah.
Yeah, you just pick and choose. And what's the single most important thing about what you do?
The person that I imagine is listening to it, which is basically who I was when I was 14. Like, I went to a school where like every single girl there seemed to be like really depressed. There was like an epidemic of eating disorders. Everyone was trying to be tiny, and I mean, I don't think it's just specific to that school. Everyone of my age has basically gone through that. And I write for them, because if I'd seen someone that was talking about it, not romanticizing it, but like, and someone that was clearly over it. That's what I never saw, someone that was better. So that's the most important thing.
You struggled with that anorexia.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, when I was early teenager. So I write for that girl, like whoever she is that's listening to it.
I love that.
Thank you.
I love that. I love that you have this very definite person, you know, like writing to a younger version of yourself.
Yeah, I just think that they get shat on. Just teenage girls get so shat on by like everyone. Like, it's really lame. All the stuff they're into is lame. If a band's main fan base is teenage girls, it makes them way lamer. It's called gender contamination, apparently. I find that really interesting.
Wow, I love that. Gender contamination. It's interesting because I'm always moaning about the sexualization of really young girls. I think there's so much, you know, I remember when I was growing up and there was like Mandy Smith, who was marrying a Rolling Stone. I think she was like 13 or something like that. It was a bass player. He got kicked out of the band for it. But you know, I remember that as a little girl, that being in the press, that this old guy that was in his 50s was marrying a 13, I think she was 15 by then, but he'd been seeing her since she was 13, and he had to get permission from her mum, you know, and that was perceived as okay, and all the other Rolling Stones went there, and everybody was like, oh, it's creepy, it's a bit weird. I mean, and I think now that just would not happen. But I'm always kind of like, I mean, I have a very young daughter now, she's 18, she's 18 months, and I'm always kind of like, God, the sexualization, you know, you know, a woman's kind of perfect moment is when she's like between 12 and 14 and 15. Mm-hmm. And I think that's literally how the whole world is geared in terms of how we're perceived in terms of attractiveness, you know, when we're like prepubescent. Sure. And there's so much of that you see in so many tiny, tiny little ways, you know. And I was always writing for that person. I was always kind of like, you know, don't listen to him. listen to him. Don't take it in. Don't think that that's who you're supposed to be, you know. It's, you know, it's, there's so much of this, like, oh, a woman under 25. After she's 25, she's kind of useless. There's so much of that mentality, even within the porn industry, you know. It's
for sure.
It's so crazy.
It seems bad. I mean, I think about this so much. I call it, I don't know if it's a PC term, but I've started calling it the baby slut, because I feel like that's what like every woman is meant to be. It's like a little sexy baby that like is super hairless and like innocent, but also really sexual and hot. And that's kind of, I try and explore that a lot in my music. That's why I sing like a little girl and I like dressing like a little girl, but I try to make it not sexy. It's kind of the Riot Girl thing of like reclaiming your girlhood. Like, why is it that we're all catcalled way more when we're preteens? It's like, I haven't been catcalled in like 3 years, I think, because they see that you're older and I don't know, you're like not as easy of a target. That's what I mean, I think about it a lot. It just sucks to be a teenage girl, because you're told that you're so, and I mean, who's winning as well? Like, I wonder who came up with the idea that like what you're meant to be is like really sexy. Like, obviously it's the guys are gonna benefit from all these like vulnerable girls thinking they have to dress a certain way or act a certain way.
I find much older guys as well, not the guys the same age.
Exactly. And that's why I fuck with Billie Eilish so much, because for me, she was the first. I just found it really, really cool how she was like, no one's going to know what my body looks like. I'd never really seen a female artist do that before. Maybe there have been ones, but I'd never seen that. And I think that's probably made a lot of younger girls feel a lot more free in how they can express themselves.
Yeah, because, I mean, I used to think, because, you know, she's 17 years old, she's 16 years old, and you guys are trying to sexualize her.
I know.
And now she's kind of 21 or 20, everyone's like, you know, now she feels confident to try to dress in a sexy way. Everyone's like, oh, you're selling out. It's like, no, I'm 20, I can handle it now.
Exactly.
You know, it's simple as that. Are you excited about Glastonbury? When are you playing?
When are you playing?
What time are you playing? What stage?
So it's Saturday, 2 p.m. BBC Introducing Sage.
Fantastic.
I am so excited. I've basically been packing for the last 2 days just because I've been wanting to drag it out to like fully take it in. I can't believe it. I still don't believe it. I'm so excited. We're all going to dress as brides. I got some wedding dresses for everyone. Going to roll around in the mud. And yeah, we're all gas.
How many in your band? Tell me about your band.
My band are amazing. It took me a hell of a long time to find them. It kind of goes back to the thing of like kind of learning to stop just being by myself. I kind of found them all in the space of about a year, through the studio, through school, through stuff like that. It's all girls, which I made a very conscious decision to do, just because, being honest, when I was in bands with boys, like, they just would play over me, like, all they would turn their guitar, like, my voice is really quiet, and they would play over me, they'd tell me what I was playing was wrong, even though it was my songs. They would, like, I just really couldn't be arsed, and it's, we have the opposite problem now. All the girls in my band are like, is it okay if I play here? I'm like, turn it up. But it's very refreshing. They're great.
Honestly. Oh, that's so much fun. I can imagine that's so much fun. Yeah. But boys always play too loud.
I know. Your band changes. Are boys, aren't they?
Yeah, I've got my drummer's wife, Eri, who's also an artist in her own right. She's in my band now.
Sick.
You know, permanently, which is, I say my band, it's not my band, it's our band. Which is really nice to have a bit of female energy in there, actually, you know, a co-conspirator. But but yeah, in those early days, you know, I definitely went through band members and I was like, oh my God, I can't be in a band with this person anymore.
Yeah.
You know, because I remember we had this guitarist and he would just play over everything and he wouldn't learn the songs properly and just solo over every song all the time and just start doing things when he wanted to do things. And that was, so in the end I fired him, I sacked him. I identify with that. So who are you looking forward to seeing at Glastonbury?
Nova Twins. I'm really excited to hear.
Ah, my friends.
I know, I listened to your episode with them. They're sick.
They're fantastic.
They're so good, and I wanted to see them at Glastonbury last year, but I missed them. So I'm really excited for that. I want to see Lizzo, because that's just going to be sick. I want to see Lana. It's going to be a very sad crowd, but I think it will be a cool moment. And it's a really good lineup. I kind of just want to explore. I want to find things I don't know about. That's what Glastonbury's good for, I think.
If I give any advice, I would say try and plan it, because it's really far from one stage to another. And so we played last year and I barely got to see anybody because it was just, I spent most of my time walking from one stage to another.
Really?
So I think in some ways it's kind of fun to spend one day in front of this stage, another day in front of this stage, and another day in front of a different stage. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to be there for a few days and that catch the nightlife. Just because it's just so hard sometimes to get to places. It's so huge. Bring lots of wet wipes, lots of water.
Oh, I will.
And don't worry about washing.
I never
just
do.
Just stay freaking dirty. There's no point. Just stay
that's
dirty.
That's the whole point. Yeah, that's why I love a festival. You just, like, marinate in your own filth. You just run around. It's great.
Who cares? Who needs to shower?
Exactly.
Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you.
Thank you, same.
Just have fun. Don't get too nervous at Glastonbury. If I give you a piece of advice about Glastonbury, is they're already on your side.
Really?
They're already on your side. They just want you to be your best. So don't worry about it. Don't stress and worry about it as, you know, worry about it enough to make sure everything's done properly and it's good. And if you make a mistake, it's great. Just laugh it off, have fun, and it's just, people love that, and don't worry about making mistakes. Nobody wants a perfectionist at Glastonbury.
It's true. Those are always the best bits of the set.
Yeah. Just have fun with it.
It's been an honour. Thank you so much.
My pleasure.